You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello, all you everyday innovators out there. I hope this week is treating you particularly well as we start our journey through 2020. I've got some big plans and actions happening this year, and I hope you do too. That's why I thought it would be a good idea to start the year with some growth mindset conversations, including this one today. Now, as you can tell, we've added some new podcast formats to Inside Launch Street. We are doing Q&A podcasts where I answer your burning questions, maybe go on a few rants, and book review podcasts where my good friend Derek and I have a coffee shop style convo about pivotal books and concepts that have transformed our lives and some iconic books and concepts we actually drastically disagree with. So lots of positive changes here. Hope you are doing and making the same. So let's dig into some growth mindset strategies with today's guest, Allison Maslin. Allison is the CEO of Pinnacle Global Network and the author of the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Scale or Fail. Allison and her team of CEO mentors pay it forward by helping business owners scale their companies, fast track their success, and create a more meaningful life. The Pinnacle Global Network, her private mentoring and mastermind enterprise that is certified by WBNC, has guided thousands of business owners over the past 10 years. All right, what do you say we get our mindset and our actions in place? Let's do it.
Allison, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to digging in on this.
Oh, I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
So what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
I have been a trapeze artist for 20 years.
What?
I have a full-size trapeze rig in my backyard.
Okay. I just have to know, how did you get into it and what do you love about it?
I was a gymnast growing up, and so I had a set of uneven bars in my backyard when I was young. And when I discovered that you could actually learn to fly on the trapeze in my early 30s, I was all over it. I felt like I had come back home. And so I've been training with a 5-generation circus family in Los Angeles for the last 20 years. I drive back and forth from San Diego, which can often be several hours. And then when we finally moved to a property with enough land, I fulfilled a dream in having my own rig built in my backyard. And besides the fact that I get to walk out my back door and walk 30 feet and climb a ladder, I love that part. But what I love about trapeze is that it forces me to be in the moment, like nothing else. Like, you really have to focus and you can't be thinking about anything else. And it just brings me back into my body because the business side of me is in my head. And so once I'm done flying, after like a couple of hours, I feel completely grounded. It would be like somebody did some sort of a meditation in a sense.
Yeah.
But for me, a very moving meditation, very physical. And that also helps me to break through any of my fears that I have up there. I become much more resilient on the ground.
Isn't it interesting how, I think you said that it was actually relates to innovation and is important for this conversation, is if you can do something physical or just different that tests your limits and shows that you can do it, you're more likely to then translate that in the work. Because, so I'll just give you kind of my equivalent of that is I do CrossFit and I never thought I'd be able to do it. I came to athleticism in my early 40s. This is not something I was naturally born with. And when I have a morning where I do more pull-ups than I ever thought possible, where I lifted more weight than I ever knew I could, I swear I am more resilient and more risk-taking for the rest of the day. Like that stuff really does translate over, even though we sometimes think of it as this compartmentalized thing, it actually can set the stage for everything else.
I agree 100%. I mean, I really have become so much more courageous over the years because I scare the crap out of myself every time I take pedestal. And, you know, when you accomplish it, you know, and there's lots of pains along the way, it is, there's no other better high, natural high. And it really does help to grow your confidence in everything else, you know, where you're willing to say, yes, let's do it. Where in the past you might shy away from it.
Yeah, it's amazing how that translates. So thank you for sharing that. You might be the first trapeze artist we've ever had on. So that's awesome. So, you know, it, actually this kind of parlays into our conversation really nicely and kind of your area of expertise. I want to start with mindset before and then get into the tactics. How do you get from a 10% mindset to a 50x growth mindset? And I know you talk a lot about that 10% to the like changing from that small percent to that big growth mindset. How do you do that from that space?
Well, it really does tie into what we were talking about regarding the trapeze, because what I've come to know is that the scarier the leaps that you take, the bigger the rewards. So it's nothing wrong with taking baby steps. At least you're moving forward. But the baby steps are only going to get you incremental growth. It's when you do those totally wild and crazy things in your business life that everyone says, oh my God, this is never going to work. Who do you think you are? You know, this is such a risk, that what I find is that energetically and monetarily, you will match that level of return.
So how do I, if I'm listening, and I agree with you, by the way, I do think, like, you know, the bigger the, I want to say the bigger the ledge, the better the exhilaration, but now I have this image of like falling. So that doesn't work. But the bigger the better, right? The reward, or the stronger the reward. How, if I'm used to taking baby steps, how do I get to a mindset or a space that allows me to shift into what you're talking about?
Well, the thing is, it's unfortunately the other way around. You actually have to do it even though you're scared to death, because the mindset's not going to change until you do it and have that sense of accomplishment. So I'll give you an example. So I lead some big events during the year, and I have one coming up, and you know, we have over 500 people that attend, and it's a major project to put this together in months and months, right? And you're putting out hundreds of thousands of dollars to commitments in hotel and all kinds of things to make this happen. So the first time that I did this event 9 years ago, I made a commitment to the hotel and a big event planner, and I had never done anything like this. And I had to get at least 100 people in the room to even have a, you know, not even break even, you know, just to, and so it was going to be for me at that time, at least $100,000. And I was about 6 weeks out from the event, and I only had 20 people booked. And you are on the line for all the hotel rooms and everything.
Yeah, like everything.
You got to pay. And I was so freaked out. I mean, to tears. My husband's like, you're never doing this again, you know, because I was so stressed out and he was so worried about me. And I was ready to go sell hotel rooms downtown with a sign or something like that. And anyway, I looked at canceling, and it was going to be this massive cancellation fee. So I felt like, okay, it's the universe saying, look, you made the commitment, do it. And so we hustled and we eked 100 people in that room for that first event. And I was terrified backstage. I got on stage, and within 2 minutes, I knew I had done the right thing. It just felt right. There were so many transformations in the room. And my husband came up to me on the second day of the event. It was a 3-day event, with tears in his eyes. And he said, now I understand why you do the work. Hmm. And, you know, but it was so scary, and it really was a risk, you know, a lot of money on the line, but had I not, it changed the trajectory of my entire company.
How did you know it was the right thing to do?
I didn't really know that it was the right thing to do, you know, until I did it. But when I made the decision to do it, in my gut, it felt right. Like, I just felt it didn't necessarily add up. Like, I don't think my accountant would, or my CFO would have really at the time.
Probably nobody would have. They would have been like, this is a risk.
But that's the difference between a visionary and someone that's the implementer.
Yeah.
Right. So you can, it doesn't always matter. Now you do need to look at the numbers because you also want to look at projections and the possibilities and so forth. But there's a level of gut that you just can't forecast. There's a level of gut that you just can't translate. But my team, after all these years, now they're like, okay, you know, she's got it. He's convinced, so we're doing it, you know.
Let me ask you a question about one of the things that, I don't want to say it's one of my pet peeves, but it frustrates me a little bit. So I'd love to hear your perspective on this. One of the things that drives me a little bit bonkers is people telling other people to be fearless. And I think that that's unattainable. First of all, fear is hardwired into our primal brain, right? To make sure that a saber-toothed tiger doesn't jump out of the bushes at us. But, and it's different today. We're no longer in the bushes. We're in the boardroom. We're in conference rooms. Like, it's very different. And fear absolutely plays tricks on us. But I think instead of helping people be fearless, I think we want to help them to manage the fear, get through the fear, use it as fuel to do the next thing. So I'd love to hear from your perspective when you think about that kind of going to those big leaps and getting those rewards, how you help people through the fear factor.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I don't, you know, we're human beings. We have fear. It's a human emotion. The difference is making the decision to move forward despite the fear.
Yeah.
And I do say as well, you know, what's behind the fear? What's the energy behind it? Because if your desire for change or desire for, you know, whatever you're going towards is greater than the fear, then that the fear is going to fuel you forward.
I like what you said there, though, about what's behind the fear. It makes me think that it's really helpful to ask yourself that question of like, okay, why am I afraid of this? Why am I afraid to speak up? Why am I afraid to put my eggs in that basket? Why am I afraid to take that leap I really want to take? Because I think to your point, that's a really, if you can understand that, I think you can more easily leverage or even get through the fear.
Definitely. And what's the worst possible scenario here? I mean, you're not going to die in most cases, although jumping off the trapeze is a little risky.
I was going to say, there are some scenarios, but generally speaking, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. But it is, the fear is a big deal, and it is what holds people back. And it is the ones that are willing to move forward despite the fear are the ones that are going to have those big returns.
You know, it's interesting. So I, you know, that little chatter that you have in your head, that's like, you can't do it. It'll never work. They'll never go for it. You'll fail. Everyone will see you fail. I don't know why it talks like that, but it does. But I named him Bernard. So that every time he starts talking, I'm like, whatever, Bernard. I don't know why. There's something about that name that I feel like I can say it in a snarky way. But it's actually been really helpful for me because when he talks, and he does for all of us, even those of us, right, who take risks on a daily basis, it's just nice to be able to recognize it and be like, whatever, not listening to you today.
Yeah, it's just Bernard.
Yeah, talking. It's just Bernard.
Yeah.
I love it. So I wanted to ask you about something that I've heard you talk about, and that is finding your multiplier. So that really intrigued me, I think, on a lot of levels, because I think kind of to your point about, you know, big risks or big leaps equals big rewards. And I think oftentimes in our work, whether we own our own business or we work inside a company, we do things that make these tiny shifts, right? We move the needle just a little bit when we're really looking for that multiplier, that thing that's going to kind of explode us onto the scene. And I think you wrote it as the thing that will help you multiply your growth, your impact, and your profits. And I loved that. Will you talk more about it?
Yes. I mean, most business owners are out there and they've got their hands in every level of business. And they're often even the one that is delivering the product or service. Let's say you're an accountant, you're an attorney, you're in a service-based business. And there's only so much time. There's only so many hours in the day. There's only so much energy that you have. And so you're going to run out of bandwidth.
Yeah.
Even if you've made a decent amount of money and you've created some good traction, the common theme is that you hit this wall. And there is no level of growth. And you, if you take a vacation, business stops.
Yes.
If you're sleeping, money coming
in. I've been there. I get it.
Right? And so this is the level where the business has to grow beyond you. And the delivery of the product or service has to grow beyond you. You've got to replicate you and your offering so that it can multiply at a much greater rate. And this is what we call scaling. That is actually the definition of scaling. And also where your expenses do not multiply at that same rate, of course. And so there are many ways to do this. There are many methods. That's what I wrote my book about, Scale or Fail. And I list 17 different methods in the book. But, you know, for instance, creating a certification program around, you know, your method that you created. And so you train other people on your method and they're out there delivering. So, for instance, I built a homeopathic college called the Homeopathic Academy of Southern California. And I sold that in 2005, but it was a 3-year certification program. And so we would train people over a 3-year period of time. And I did this because I'm such a fan of homeopathic medicine, and I practiced for many years. But I could only help so many people. And so I really wanted to make a difference. And so it's still running today. I don't run it anymore. But that's one way to scale. You can do membership programs. You can do franchises. You can create a software with your company, or, you know, upsells and cross sells. And these are things that we do in Pinnacle Global Network with our clients, where they'll take one way they've been doing business, like selling a product to retail stores where there's a really small margin, hard to make a lot of money in that, old way of doing business. And one of our clients is a company called Dog is Good, and we help them create pop-up shops across the country. Mm-hmm. So now they have their raving fans of their products are out there actually acting like their sales force, because they are selling their products. In a sense, they are their distributor.
I love that. So will you talk a little bit, so in your book, Scale or Fail, you said you have, I think it was 17 different methods or ways. Will you, and I love that one, will you talk about maybe one or two more, maybe some that really resonated with people that get your book or work with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so for it, I'll just go back to this client, the Dog is Good. And their brand is, people love them. They love dogs, right? So I'm a dog lover as well.
Yeah, me too.
And even though their products were selling, they just weren't making a lot of money. So we actually created 5 different multipliers for them. One is the pop-up shops, and that really has exploded, and they have about 150 of them across the country. So obviously they're not at all of these pop-up shops. These are their customers out there doing that. We created a subscription program for them that the retailers actually buy. And so they know that they have a certain amount of money coming in each month. That is more, that's more consistent. We also have sold licensing for them, where people take their brand, Dog is Good, and they put it on their products. We also went direct to consumer. You know, online, web, direct to consumer sales. So that's taken, you know, one traditional revenue stream and turned it into several others. We have a construction company, Cold Storage Construction. So you literally can do this for any type of business. And we help them create a certification program for cold storage contractors. So they're the only people in the world that have the certification program. So now they, when they go to get business, they can say, look, our contractors are certified. And so they always have a workforce that they can draw from. And then they attract amazing team members because, you know, their level of training is so high.
So I love that you bring up, by the way, two completely different examples, because I think sometimes we get, for all of us on Launch Street, I think we sometimes get so wrapped up in our world, we think, well, that doesn't apply to me because that's not my industry. So I love these examples because they're so drastically different. I think that's a wonderful way to highlight that we can learn a lot from other industries too. And in fact, a lot applies to us because at the end of the day, we're all in business. There's some foundational elements to business. What I'm curious about, because I love these ideas you're sharing, is when you start working with a client, how do you figure out what their multiplier is going to be? What process, method, or even kind of triggers are you looking for to figure that out?
Well, we in Pinnacle Global Network, so we mentor business owners all over the world, and we strategically partner them with a CEO that has built a very successful company that's on our team. And then we also put them in a mastermind with business owners in all different industries and business models. And what that does is exactly what you said. It helps them to see, oh my God, I never thought of that. Nobody's doing that in the travel industry, or no one's doing that in the financial industry, because you really want to set yourself apart in this disruptive, time that we live in. You have to be on the pulse of your industry. You cannot do things the way everybody else is doing. So we really dive into their business, and it has to resonate with the owner of the company. You know, they have to get excited about it. So we look at lots of different ways that they can multiply. So one way to create a multiplier is to buy other companies. Not everybody is going to have the stomach for that. But you can actually buy your competitors. A lot of times, you know, if the timing is right, you'd be surprised what you could buy a company for. And you could really finance it over a long period of time. That's a great way to scale, because you're taking on their customer base. And then, of course, we help them to work through all the company culture stuff. Somebody else might say, I have absolutely no interest in that. Let's do a membership program. So for instance, we work with a staffing company and they're like, wow, how could we create a multiplier? We're just helping recruit people for jobs. And ends up that in the staffing industry, then there are legalities that are changing all of the time. And there's an incredible amount of research to stay on top of the laws and the things that are changing and so forth. So we help them create a membership program where they do the research for you. You pay X number a month and you get all this sent to you. You don't have to hire someone to keep you compliant in your industry. So there are really no boundaries in this. In fact, the more creative, the better.
I have so many ideas for my business that I was just writing down. I feel like I got a personal consulting session, so thank you. But for all of us on Launch Street, I think we're all thinking now like, oh, how do I think differently about my revenue streams, about where I deliver my products, about distribution? Because I think one of the things that was unsaid, but in your answer, was that it's across all the different elements of the business. It's not just how do I have a product or service that's innovative or stands out, but how do I think about delivering it to the market, marketing it to them, engaging with my customers? That's innovation and all the elements of the business.
Yeah. And you know, even if you've been running your business for a long time, you can always add a multiplier, and you really only need one.
Yeah.
So like in our company, in Pinnacle, we have clients all over the country, and we have in other countries too, but we have a lot more in the United States. And one day I just got this like download of, wow, we are really deep in about 38 cities across the country. Like we have several members in our mentoring and mastermind company. I said, why don't we create local communities in those areas and train some of our clients that have been with us for several years to run those communities? And so, I mean, we launched just last year 18 of them. And it's been phenomenal. They love it. They get together within their community with the other members and they mastermind. It's very structured. We have it really, you know, tight, and, you know, we train them and we put a whole system behind it. But it's actually been fairly easy, and it's creating tremendous breakthroughs. So, you know, and I'm not there.
Isn't it funny how, I love how you ended that with, I'm not there. What I appreciate about that is I think sometimes we're our own biggest bottleneck and we miss the opportunity for our multiplier, for the thing that's going to make us successful because of control. We think we have to be so involved for it to work. Do you find that to be true?
Oh yeah. And you know, I've been there. It's scary to let go because you care so much about your clients and you're afraid the whole thing's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
It's really our ego that gets in the way, because the truth is that your customers just want to be well taken care of. They want their questions answered. They want to be supported, and they want to be supported by people that are qualified. But I truly think people feel more supported by a team than knowing that, you know, everything, they're just depending on one person.
Right. You know? That's very true. So I want to use that to actually make sure that I ask you about another thing, which is you talk about building a team managed company. Why is that so important to success?
Well, ultimately, a successful company is one that you can leave for a long period of time and your business continues to thrive. And so just like what we've been talking about now, and I share in my book and what we help our clients scale through are five different phases to build that team managed company. So it's an evolvement. It doesn't happen overnight. But it starts out as you and then a few people, but you're still kind of the bottleneck. Then you start to build teams, and you know, that can be a little bit crazy until you really get the roles nailed down. But this is the tricky part, because you've got to start letting go.
Yeah.
You know, and what happens, the reason that it doesn't become a team managed company is because you're still a boss and you're not stepping into leadership. And if you're a boss, you're micromanaging, you're, you know, telling people what to do instead of inspiring them into action. And also really finding those leaders amongst your team and building them up to take ownership of that department of your company, whether it's marketing or sales or admin or customer service, whatever that is. And you don't have to have a ton of employees to do this. You know, if you had strong leaders, you had five people, you know, there's a point where you have to start stepping back and letting them run with it. It's kind of like with your children. If you are constantly rescuing them, they are never going to, you know, spread their wings and fly. They're always going to be depending on you. And it does feel scary, that like what we were talking about earlier, but once you do, it's, you know, they will make mistakes. They are human, but if you allow them to, they will learn from those mistakes really fast, and it will build their confidence, and you'll have a team that really reflects your core values. And it's almost as if they hear what you are saying and your presence is there without you there.
So let me ask you this. Well, first of all, you've mentioned there are five phases. Can you kind of walk us high level what those phases are?
Yeah. So phase one, I call seeker. And that's when you are like the solopreneur. You're the five woman band, five man band, doing everything. Phase two is the pioneer. And this is where you're starting to really get some traction. You're like getting your hands dirty and you've got a more clarity on your target audience. And you might have a few employees, like an assistant, a bookkeeper, hopefully, and a marketing person. But you're still approving everything that goes in and out of your company. You can't scale still. And then phase three, I call the ringleader. And that is, I call the ringleader because it's a circus in phase three. That's when the teams start emerging. And teams are a lot like family. And sometimes there's issues in family. And sometimes you've got people on the bus that shouldn't be there. And, you know, so it can be a little chaotic until you get clear on what you don't want. And then, you know, really the clear role so that your team, they get the expectations. And so, you know, you start to get more clarity of your big picture vision in phase three. You start to put systems and processes in place. You start to have regular meetings. And then that moves you to phase four. If you can take the leap, that's when you've got to take the leap, what like we were talking earlier, to phase four, which I call the co-creator. And this is when it really starts to get fun and more the reason why you got into business in the first place. And that is because you are working with the team. It's not the top down, like old school, being the dictator. You know, you're really tapping into the creativity and the ideas of your team. See, a lot of times your team will come to you with ideas, and we as the you know, the leader or the founder, we're like, oh yeah, well, we tried that before and didn't work.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And so that's not really inspiring, you know, that most likely they're not going to come back to you again. Or if you're constantly answering the questions that they ask instead of saying, you know what, why don't you take that, put a plan together and bring it back to me? Mm-hmm. Or how would you solve that problem? What would you do? And so you really are kind of instilling this culture that they are owning their role in the business. They're really taking ownership. And so they start asking the questions of how do we create more profits? How do we create a better customer experience? And this is like, oh my, it's like Disneyland for the owner. Like, wow, this is amazing, you know? And so for me, for instance, I have 10 CEOs that work with our clients. They're incredible. I mean, you know, they're some of them are a lot smarter than I am. And so I can go to sleep at night knowing that our clients are really well taken care of. And then moving on to phase five, this is what I call the visionary. And this is where you really just don't even need to be there. And your goal is to just shut up, you know, like put tape over your mouth because, you know, you're just going to make things
better. I think I do that sometimes to my team.
Well, it's really shifting to work on the business.
Yeah.
You know, most business owners are working in the business and your business is running you. If you're working on the business, strategy, relationships, things like me coming on this podcast with you, that's working on the business.
Let me ask you a question. I love how you're saying that in versus on the business. If you're at the, well, I guess 1 through 4, really, you're still kind of in the business, just at different phases or different levels. It's really not until you get to 5, right, that you're really on the business. If you're in that space of being in the business and you want to get to that next phase so that you can get to on the business, what's your advice for those leaders? How do you think about getting to that place? I'm going to leave it there. How do you think about taking that leap?
Well, it's really about replacing yourself. So one of the things you can do is say, okay, what are the top 3 things that take up most of my time? You know, what do you spend most of your time on? Narrow that down to 3 things and say, okay, what do I need to do to replace those 3 things? Have somebody else do that. And that's, you know, generally it could be client facing. It could be writing. It could be, you know, maybe you're doing the bookkeeping. And so it really is figuring those things out and then having the guts to find someone to take that place. Now, you might not hire all 3 people at once. You might say, okay, I'm going to hire this person in January. Then the goal is the next person in May and then the next person in September.
Well, I like what you're saying there because I also think that sometimes when we think about getting to the next level, we try to take it on at once, all of it at once. And that's, I think, sometimes why we fail because it's too much. And then we get overwhelmed and we think, well, what we were doing was easier than this. So I'm going to pull back. And what I hear you saying is identify those things, and then identify a roadmap to get you to that place you want to be, not identify those things and go tackle them all at once.
Right. I mean, you might think it's easier, but really it's not. It's just comfort. It's being in that comfort zone and afraid to take the leap. That's what holds you back. But you will see that it changes your life when you can get these right people in there to free you up, and so that you can be out there building relationships, you know, closing bigger sales, things like that, rather than, you know, filing papers. You know, you're losing potentially thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars if you're the one that is doing that work. And that's just really playing small, and it's not a smart business strategy at all.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that about filing papers. So one, I'll just pull back the curtain for a second and tell you that one of the things that helped me get from one level to the next is, and I don't think I'm at visionary completely yet. I think I'm probably, I vacillate, I think, between 3 and 4. But the interesting thing is, so I spent a lot of time trying to figure out where on our cloud that people, you know, where we store stuff, things need to go, where on our server. And finally, Laura, who I think your team has met, who works for me, my business manager, and really the person that keeps me on track, turned to me and goes, all right, Tamara, we're going to create one folder that says to file, and you're just going to stick everything in there, and then I'm going to go put it away. You don't need to worry about where stuff is filed. You don't need to, like, that's not going to make us money and grow us if you're worried about where things are filed. I'll put stuff away, and when you need it, just, you know, search for it or ping me and I'll find it for you. And I swear to you, Allison, it was the most freeing thing in the world to not have to manage where the files go, which sounds so basic, but I was spending so much time trying to figure out what to put where.
Oh yeah, it's those little things that just suck our energy.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, takes you out of your flow. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff will drive you nuts. I used to have with my team where I would ask for something and they would send me a link and a password. I'm like, I don't want the link and the password. Just send me the thing.
Right.
I don't even have time to do that, you know?
Right.
And so, but they, you know, they're sitting in front of the computer. It's not a big deal for them, but they didn't realize that, you know, I'm on the road. I can't be like trying to log in and all of that. I mean, you've just got to find ways to really simplify everything and just get the support. I mean, statistically, business owners that get an assistant within the first 6 months of business get to 7 figures in half the time.
Yeah, it really, I'd say that was a big transformation for me and for Launch Street for sure, is having a team, and more specifically a right hand. And I Laura, so much more than an assistant, you know, it is, she's the right hand and she's like the vice president in a lot of ways. But it's so helpful to have that person. And what I found fascinating is that at every turn we would figure out, all right, where am I wasting time that she could take on that allow me to do what I need to do and allow her to do what she needs to do? Where can we systematize stuff so that neither of us are doing it? It's just all like that thinking is done for us. And it's been really transformative in helping me get from an in the business to on the business. And it's an ongoing process for us. I don't think we solved it overnight. And I think we'll continue to find things that help us get to that place so that we can grow.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's always a work in progress. There's always new things that are going to be thrown in your lap, and it's very easy to fall back in old habit and go, oh, I'll just do it, you know, but then it's like, oh, I'll just do it. And then I'll do it again and I'll do it again and do it again. And then it's added up to hours, you know? And it's exciting too. You know, people are, oh, I don't want a bunch of employees, but if you have the right team, it's fun. Like we just, many of our employees have been with us for a long time. We just had our Christmas party and went out to dinner, and I love these people. You know, I just, it feels so wonderful for them to be a part of the experience of the vision that we have and all the people that we're helping. It's so rewarding. And, you know, you're not just changing lives of your customers, you're changing lives of your team. You're giving them an opportunity to really thrive and use their gifts.
Yeah, that's very true. Before we kind of have to close out, I'm curious, when you work with your clients or your team internally to get them to do their jobs well and kind of train them, how do you drive innovative thinking and just continuing to stay ahead of the curve and work through that fear?
Well, I think that, you know, it's not just educating you, the business owner. It's important that your team stays up to snuff on what's happening in the marketplace and so forth. So I'm constantly, you know, giving them opportunities to go to workshops and, you know, up leveling themselves, because that raises the bar for the whole company. And then, you know, we also get together and do a full day meeting about three times a year, where we do breakout sessions, and we really, you know, we talk about some of the challenges, some of the gaps, some of the opportunities, and I really tap into their creativity. That's one of the ways we stay innovative. The other way is really surveying our clients and going, okay, what's working, what's not working. And we've gotten some great ideas and suggestions from our clients.
I love that. You know, I'm intrigued that you mentioned that about getting great suggestions from your clients, because I think that one of the mistakes that we make is we put up this invisible wall between us and our customers, whether that's B2B or like direct to consumer, and we want things to be perfect before we get to them. But I have found, and I'm guessing kind of from what you said you have too, that customers are really willing to go along the journey with us if we open the doors and let them in, and if they know what we're doing and we're transparent about it. Don't you find that they're like the greatest source of ideas and innovation if we just allow them to be?
Oh my gosh, they are. And I'm really transparent with them. Like this new division in our company, I mean, we're in our 10th year, so we do have our systems down and we have a proven record, but we launched this whole new division with roundtables. And I said, this is a work in progress. We're building the plane while we fly it. This isn't going to be perfect. And it's been great, because it's as if we're all building it together, and they're sharing, you know, their feedback and their experience and ideas that are coming from it. And, you know, if you're too rigid, I think you miss out on all the potential magic that's right in front of you.
That's a great way to say it. If you're too rigid, I'm going to pay attention to when I'm being rigid. Before we close out, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
First of all, you can get my book at scaleorfail.com. And then our website is Pinnacle with two N's. GN.com. So Pinnacle GN, like global network.com. And so you'll learn about me and you'll learn about our coaching program, Pinnacle, and you can reach out to us directly as well.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll put all those links in the show note. What's your final piece of advice for innovators on Launch Street?
Get clear on your vision. Clear on what it is that you want to create. You don't have to worry about the how. And stretch your mind as far as you can, as far as what you feel that you would be able to accomplish. And then just walk towards it every single day. And don't let anyone tell you it can't be done.
Do you have a routine or a ritual that helps you either get clarity or to, I like the way you said that, kind of keep walking towards that vision?
Yeah, I mean, I have a process. Actually, I outline it in the book on creating your big picture vision. And I even have a worksheet there to do that. And this is, you know, as we're stepping into a new decade, this is the perfect time to do that. But, you know, find a quiet place. You know, be out in nature. That's a lot of times sparks creativity. Give yourself space. It's not going to happen when you're in the middle of a to-do list and you're pounding away at the computer. You really have to give yourself a chance for your mind to open up and then, you know, start putting the piece together. You know, in your ideal scenario, how would you design your life? How do you want to spend your day? Who are the people that you want to surround yourself with? What kind of clients do you want to work with? You know, what kind of products do you want to have out there? And again, doesn't have to be perfect, but I'll tell you, we do this every year and it works. You know, the power of intention is probably one of the most powerful strategies that I live by.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it's interesting, the girlfriends and I who are business owners, we get together every, 4 or 6 months, just depending on our needs. And oftentimes we've done a strategy session and dug into tactics. And this year we're getting together very beginning of January. And we agreed that we were going to do none of the how and do all of the why and the what, and just focus there and stay very high level. We're actually starting by going to a rage room and breaking stuff. And that'll be like closing out 2019 before we get into 2020. I don't know if you've ever tried rage rooms, but they are so much fun and I encourage everyone to do it.
Wow. No, I've never done that. What do you just like take, you just start breaking things?
Yeah. No. So you go in, you've got full on like protective gear on, you've got a bat or they call it a Thor's hammer, and they play really loud music, whatever motivates you. You take in like, I don't know, like a flat screen TV or an old printer, and you just go wild, and it is so much fun. Yeah, and it is just a great ritual for like just letting go of all that extra energy and closing out something and moving on to the next. And it's fun, and it's most axe throwing places have a rage room. It sounds horrible, but it really is just an absolute blast and really a wonderful way to just get it all out.
Yeah, a big release, right?
Yeah, total release. But to your, it's kind of what you're saying. It really, the focus on the why and the what is so important. And I don't think we spend enough time there. We get so into tactics so soon.
Yeah, exactly. I think we get caught up in, oh, well, how are we going to do that? And is that possible? Yeah. And all of that. And that really is a roadblock.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if I hear you right, I think what you're saying right is that really separate the two, like focus on the why, the what, the clear vision, and then the tactics versus trying to intermingle the two.
Exactly.
Well, that's an awesome way to end it. Allison, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I feel like I've got some visioning work to do.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.